Good morning. I'm Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. Yeah, why not? It's Thursday. Good morning to all. This is Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation, as we will be after tomorrow. But Dan Pashman is here, and
Dan
Pashman is going to be here next week, too.
That's right. Brendan and I will be just trying to hold down the fort while you and Mark and Mark, while Mark and you
are not here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Chris Lopresto is here. I think Chris is going to be here next week, right?
That's correct.
Chris must be, you know, he must have a bag full of money in his pocket. You know that, right? I know he bet big on the game last night between the Mets and the Diamondbacks. What did they score, like 32 runs in two games or something?
Yeah, yeah, about that much. That's normal.
Normal, sure, that's normal. 14-1 and 18-4, that's normal.
Yeah,
Jose, for a football team.
Right, Jose Reyes, like the new Barry Bonds, huh, Kalo?
Yeah, 6 home runs. He's had 3 home runs in the last, what, 4 days?
Has he been tested? Somebody needs to test him. Listen, I don't know what's going on in Iraq, folks. They are supposed to be signing off on this Constitution today. They say the National Assembly is supposed to meet, but guess what? They don't know when.
Right.
They haven't set a time. Now, what are they, about 8 hours in front of us? It must be at least mid to late afternoon in Baghdad. If they haven't started the meeting yet, I'd say they're starting a little late.
Right.
Not only that, you can't tell the fighters without a scorecard all of a sudden. You got the Sunnis on the streets of Baghdad assaulting people at checkpoints, and then you've got Muqtada al-Sadr's Sadr army fighting other Shiites
in
Najaf and other parts of the country. What's going on here? Suddenly, you have all of this confusion going on. Al-Sadr, by the way, like the Sunnis, doesn't like the Constitution. I think he wants something a little bit more akin to absolute Sharia law or something. I don't know.
Right.
But it appears as though al-Sadr has put his people out in the street after, by the way, an incident. He didn't just do this because he, you know, thought yesterday was a great day to start a fight. Apparently, somebody targeted his offices for some kind of an attack. His offices had been closed for a period of time. They reopened, and this is, I believe, in Najaf, and they were attacked. So he responded by going out and putting his people out in the street and attacking other folks. All this says, by the way, that this Iraqi government that we're all depending so heavily on, that George W. Bush is depending so heavily on, has absolutely no control over what's going on there. They are fighting, you know, when the fights go on, yeah, they may try and target a few people, they may try and stop them, but there is absolutely no ability to prevent the violence that we're reading about and seeing about and hearing each and every day. And it's getting to be quite a scary thing.
You're absolutely right, Mark. I mean, I don't know at what point the mainstream media starts to use the term civil war, but that's really the big term that everyone's been afraid to use. But, I mean, we already have 3 different groups fighting amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have what Shias fighting against Shias.
Yes, we've got Shias fighting Shias.
So now we got 4 different groups fighting. That's not even counting the U.S.
Yep.
Then you got the foreign fighters.
Yep.
Who are just in there to fight.
The Syrians and the Jordanians and the Egyptians.
Right. They came for the terrorist training camp. They decided to stay for the war. You know, but at what point is this a civil war? I think it's ever closer.
It is getting awfully close. And by the way, don't be surprised at all if some of the very people who are going to have to come together in the National Assembly to ratify this Constitution don't become targets themselves.
Right.
Many of these Iraqi politicians are seen by some, rightly or wrongly, as collaborators. That means that they are open targets. You saw Zarqawi some time ago say that Muslims should kill other Muslims, which is a sick doctrine in my judgment. Nobody should be killing anybody. But the bottom line is that Zarqawi is saying, look, Muslims can kill other Muslims if they're collaborating with the enemy, with the infidel. Well, in being a part of this National Assembly, as far as some of these insurgents are concerned, is in fact collaborating with the infidel.
Yeah.
You know, there's joy on another subject. There's joy in a couple of places in New England today. But a lot of folks in Jersey are just a little bit upset. You know, that panel that is to decide on closings, Pentagon or Defense Department base closings.
Right.
Spared a couple of places in New England, spared the big submarine operation in London, and New London, I should say, in Groton. They did not spare Fort Monmouth in New Jersey.
Right.
And folks in that part of the state are highly, highly upset. Fort Monmouth is a gigantic employer there. Some people are estimating anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 civilian jobs will be lost in that base closing. But they seem to have managed to, at least this panel, turned around some other recommendations that the Defense Department under Donald Rumsfeld made. And certainly when you start talking about the submarine base in New London, that is an economic engine that drives the entire eastern part of the state of Connecticut. So I'm sure they are very, very happy people today. There's a tropical storm on the way. You know, there used to be a group called Katrina and the Waves, and it looks like that's right. going to be real apropos down in South Florida.
Didn't they do Walking on Sunshine?
Yes, they did. Well, not today, they're not.
Right.
They're going to be, tropical storm Katrina is expected to strengthen before it hits Florida either late tonight or early tomorrow. Folks in Florida are now, and you know, a day ago, 24 hours ago, they were saying that they didn't think this was going to be that strong of a hurricane. Now I think they're starting to change their tune a little bit. And, you know, Florida, in addition to being, you know, the home for, you know, millions of retirees, is also the target of seemingly every hurricane and tropical disturbance that takes place in the Caribbean. And they are, I saw some figures the other day said there's been like $46 billion worth of damage done to the state of Florida over the last decade or so in terms of hurricanes that have hit or reached landfall in the state.
Yeah, it is rough out there. It's not an easy place to live. We certainly wish the best to the people in Florida. Although I do think, you know, I'm definitely a 100% believer in evolution among humans. And I also believe that, you know, and I'm not breaking any new ground, so to speak, here. But, you know, the earth moves.
Yeah.
And the continents move, all right? We used to all be one big block. All the continents used to be connected millions of years ago, Riley, and they separated. They moved around. And the Earth is still shifting, and plates are still moving. And if you look at the southeast coast of the U.S., from Florida all the way up to about North Carolina, to where Cape Hatteras is, you see a very smooth line. And you can see that that line has been carved out by hurricanes that travel that same route.
Yeah,
year after year for hundreds and thousands of years. And so what's happening is the natural changing of the shape of our of the world that we know. And I know a lot of it's hard to fathom that because you won't really, really see the change until we're all long gone. When you look at a place,
then we won't see it.
Right, right. But human, I mean, hopefully they'll still be human beings, our great-great-great-great-grandchildren. You know?
I guess they're going to have webbed feet or something because they're going to have to evolve to deal with this.
Yeah, well, at the rate we're going, I think you'll be able to walk from east to west across Florida in about 1,000 years.
Well, you know, everybody's been saying for many, many years that California was going to eventually split off from the rest of the country anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if not philosophically, geographically.
Right.
Because, you know, all those plates that they have out there, you know, the San Andreas Fault, the Hayward Fault, all
sure.
of them. I mean, it's an earthquake waiting to happen, and they say one is going to happen very, very soon. You know, I don't know what it is. And, you know, we had a discussion about this before we went on the air this morning. What is it with the French and Lance Armstrong? I mean, here's a guy who's won the Tour de France 7 times. And this magazine, L'Equipe, which apparently is funded in part by the same people that fund the Tour de France, have released these findings saying that the guy was doped up in 1999. They used 6-year-old urine samples where they matched numbers because the donors were supposed to be anonymous. Lance Armstrong has no way to refute this short of saying, well, look, I didn't do it.
Right.
And now you've got the Tour de France director, LeBlanc, saying that Armstrong's doping is a proven fact.
It's really offensive, Riley. And I'm, you know, the first one to stand up and criticize athletes who take performance-enhancing drugs. I don't like it one bit. But you know, the French have been out to get Lance Armstrong for a long, long time. And this newspaper in particular has a track record of going after Lance Armstrong time and time again. Now, look, if you have some conclusive proof, I'll be the first one to condemn him. But I'm still on Lance Armstrong side here because I know that the French here have an agenda. This newspaper has an agenda. This paper is like the, you know, to put this in political terms, this paper, L'Equipe, is to Lance Armstrong like Fox News is to the left.
Well, you know, Armstrong himself says that this L'Equipe story suggests, quote, deeper issues, including votes against Paris for the 2012 Olympics, possibly conflicts between the tour and international cycling officials, and he asked for L'Equipe to identify other positive samples, because apparently there were 15 samples that contained this performance-enhancing drug, EPO, from the 1999 Tour de France. Now, that's some truly scary stuff, if it's true. At this point, I would want to see further proof.
Yeah.
Right? Given the prejudices involved, given the nonsense that's going on in the past with this magazine and Lance Armstrong, you don't ask Lance to prove it. Lance can't prove it.
Right.
You prove it. You made the accusation.
They had a test from 1999.
Yeah, I know. I know. But, hey, you know, I guess French emotions run deeper than we think. I don't know. I'll tell you whose emotions are running pretty deep about now. Pat the Flip-Flopper Robertson.
Yeah.
I can't even call the guy Reverend anymore.
No.
He's lost that designation as far as morning sedition is concerned.
Can we go ahead and excommunicate him, Riley, from an official morning sedition excommunication?
As long as you don't say take him out. Okay. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Pat Robertson and some flip-flopping foolishness as morning sedition rolls on. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. And now we will discuss the disgusting Christian, alleged Christian.
Yeah.
Maron calls him blow. Well, they
faux
call
Christian.
Faux Christian.
Yeah.
Blow monkey. Oh, no, he calls Bush the blow monkey.
Right.
I don't know what this guy is. Maybe senile.
He's just a dirtbag.
Desperately ill.
You know what else? You know what he is? He's an extremist.
Well, that
religious
is.
Cleric.
Yeah.
He's no different from a lot of the fire-breathing Islamic clerics in the Middle East. But anyway, let's get into this, Riley.
Muqtada Robertson?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. That fits.
He's America's Muqtada al-Sadr. I'll explain that in a little bit. But let's go ahead and lay it out, point for point, Pat Robertson and his horrible statements at the beginning of the week, and then his attempt to backtrack, and then his backtrack on the backtrack, and his flip-flop. This guy's running scared.
Well, yeah, he's definitely running scared, because I don't think he believed that there would be any firestorm around this. He's probably sitting out there, wherever he's from, thinking, well, hey, nobody knows who Hugo Chavez is in America anyway, and if I say take him out, you know, people will understand what I'm saying. First he says... assassination. Then he says he didn't say that. Then he says he meant kidnapping. Then he said he didn't mean assassination. Then he says, okay, I did say assassination. Sorry. And truly, this man is sorry. There is no excuse for this kind of behavior from a public figure who ran for the presidency of the United States. Now, we've had some crackpots in American history who have run for the presidency.
Yeah.
Pat Robertson has joined that pantheon at this point. The man just simply ought to be taken off of whatever that show is. I know that he started the Family Channel or whatever the name of that channel was.
Right.
That was then bought by Fox and then bought by ABC, and he came along as part of the furniture. That I understand. But you see, at a point, if people get organized, and of course, we do not advocate boycotts of anything or anyone. That would be contrary to
why not?
Because it's contrary to FCC regulations.
It is?
No, actually, you can get sued, strangely enough, not by the FCC, but you can get sued for advocating a boycott publicly under certain circumstances. Huh. Yes.
Well, I will say this. MediaMatters.org is working to convince ABC to drop Pat Robertson's show. So you can go to that website and learn more about that.
Yes, that you can do, and right. That we can say. But let's hear what this man had to say so that folks understand exactly how diabolical, and I'm using that in religious terms, how diabolical this man is. This is Pat Robertson on the 700 Club this past Monday.
He has destroyed the Venezuelan economy, and he's going to make that a launching pad for communist infiltration and Muslim extremism all over the continent. You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war. We have the ability to take him out, and I think the time has come that we exercise that ability.
Now, exactly what?
What?
What was that?
Right.
You know, this is Pat Robertson. This was on Monday. He's talking about Venezuela's elected head of government, President Hugo Chavez. Now, here he comes 2 days later, and he kind of sort of says, I didn't mean what I said the first time.
I didn't say assassination. I said our special forces should, quote, take him out. And take him out can be a number of things, including kidnapping. There are a number of ways to take out a dictator from power besides killing him. I was misinterpreted by the AP, but that happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
The thing about this, Riley, is that in those first comments, it was pretty obvious. Like, this was not a passing phrase. This was not a couple of words. He went on about this for close to a minute. He drove this point home. There was no doubt, if you were paying attention, what Pat Robertson was saying about Chavez, and then he tries to back off it. But we get some sound here that I think might clear up. If you're a little confused about what was said, if you're not sure about, you know, who to believe, I think we're going to go ahead and lay that out for you.
Yeah, why don't we let people hear exactly what Pat Robertson did and did not say.
I didn't say assassination. You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. I didn't say assassination. If he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. I didn't say assassination. Assassinate him. I didn't say assassination. We really ought to go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Busted.
So that pretty much lays it all out. Now, I am not one for increased FCC regulation, but I find we live in a very strange world where people can talk about sausages or sex toys and get investigated by the FCC, and this man talks about something that would, in theory, impact U.S. national security. Because if the Venezuelans stop selling us their oil, that has a direct impact on American national security. Remember, we've talked that we've invaded a country in part over access to oil in a particular region. So here's Pat Robertson shilling for whatever organization, because I have a feeling that there's somebody behind all of this, that there's somebody that's behind Pat Robertson trying to introduce the idea of getting rid of Hugo Chavez. Remember that in 2002, when that coup attempt took place, the United States announced the coup before it was finished.
Right.
You know, and afterwards, we have nothing to do with it. And now people in the State Department, people across the Bush administration are saying, well, the idea that we would try and assassinate or try and deal with Hugo Chavez in some violent way, that's ludicrous. That's ridiculous. Yet we have example after example after example, from Lumumba in the Congo forward to Grenada to all these different places where the United States did, in fact, act to take out leaders.
It's true. So, and we should give a special shout out real quick to MediaMatters.org.
Yes.
They're still relatively new out there, and it's because of their work that we find out about these kind of comments. They used to just go under the radar, and now the whole public knows just how extreme someone like Pat Robertson is because of Media Matters.
Well, coming up, we've got Mark's Call to Future Mark. And this is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Right.
And also a little strange. Stay with us. Morning Sedition continues. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
It's 34 minutes past the hour. Wake up if you got to go to work. It's Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation, but he is not forgotten. Every week, Mark Maron gets a call from his future self. And since we knew he was going to be on vacation this week, he didn't want to miss out on his weekly advice from 50 years in the future. So before Mark left, he recorded this conversation with Future Mark. Let's hear that, Chris.
Hey, buddy.
Hey,
what's
buddy,
up?
What's up?
So Future Mark, what's going on in 2050, man?
I'm in therapy.
Oh, wow. Oh, so is this a bad time to call, then?
No, why? It's just us. You're me anyway.
Oh, that's true. So what's that noise? I thought you were in therapy.
Well, you know, therapy's come a long way since then. You can either go the traditional couch and talking thing, or, of course, there's the chocolate cure. Turns out those lonely heavy ladies were right. It does make you feel better.
Oh,
and then there's Dinosaur Island.
Whoa, wait, there's a Dinosaur Island therapy option?
Dude, you get to fly around in a helicopter gunship and blow the crap out of cloned dinosaurs.
That works? As therapy?
You have got to see a T-Rex splattered across a hillside. It totally resets your gauges, man.
All right. Well, so what kind of therapy are you doing?
Well, you know, I thought about working through all my issues and stuff, but, you know, I've been down that road, so I just said, you know what the hell with it? I'm just getting a new brain with it.
Wow. So they're just, like, new brains sitting around?
No, it's mine. They grew up from my stem cells down at the Brain King.
Brain King?
Yeah. Don't go to Brain World. They put in a lot of extras and then charge you later. All right, hold on a second. They're backing my new brain in right now. There might be a couple seconds here while I'm brainless. Bear with me.
Okay.
Da-da-da-da-da. So So anyway, you can have the neurotech take stuff out of your brain, like memories, or you can put new ones in. You know, just whatever. You just say, oh, hold on, wait just a second, they're securing it. Ah. Oh, it's got that new brain smell.
Oh.
You're all set, Mr. Marin. Wow, I feel terrific. I feel smart, good-looking, like I can do anything.
Wow, what's that like?
Excuse me, Mr. Marin, can we just give that new brain a spin real quick?
Yeah, sure, whatever you want.
How do you feel about your mother?
She was perfect, man. I mean, she let me eat whatever I wanted. I was like the luckiest kid in the world.
Sounds like it's working fine. Enjoy your new brain.
Wow, man. Just wow. So, any advice for me?
Yeah, you know that expression, digging to China?
Yeah.
Don't make a big thing of it. Just start digging there.
Okay.
Hey, buddy. Really great talking to you, okay? You rock, man. Did anyone tell you that today? Well, you do. You rock. I'll talk to you later.
Later.
Wow, pretty upbeat conversation with his boy this time.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. I love the battle between Brain King and Brain World.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of brains, it doesn't seem as our Pentagon, as if our Pentagon under Donald Rumsfeld has any, okay? First, they decide to organize this big glom tribute to people who have served in the armed forces featuring Clint Black, which is really kind of like a support Bush fest. And now we find out that at Arlington National Cemetery, the Pentagon has been telling families of fallen soldiers and Marines that they have the option to have government-furnished headstones inscribed with either Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation Iraqi Freedom at no extra charge.
Well, actually, Riley, it's not even so much that they're asking them if they want to do that. It's that they are actually going ahead and inscribing these tombstones without checking with the families in some instances.
Yeah.
Some of these families are going to visit their children's graves in Arlington National Cemetery and finding out after the grave has been made, after the burial has taken place, that there is military Pentagon propaganda in the name of Operation Iraqi Freedom or Operation Enduring Freedom inscribed onto the burial.
Well, you know, the Department of Veterans Affairs says, this headstone is not a PR purpose. It's to let the country know and the people that visit the cemetery know who served this country and who made the country free for us.
Right.
End quote.
And, I mean, they call it Operation Iraqi Freedom. That's propaganda. All right, now I understand the military makes up their propaganda names. That's fine, they can do that. But that has no place on the tombstone of a military soldier. And this is a departure from protocol. This has never been done in any previous conflict. It only ever had the name, date of birth, you know, personal information. They've never done this before, and it is clearly a political maneuver in an attempt to shape the way history is written.
Well, absolutely. And what you also have going on here is people who, don't even give their approval having this done on the headstones of their loved ones and, you know, having to say, as some people are quoted as saying in this particular piece, that they're a little taken aback by this whole thing. How do you say that this is a tribute and it's not product placement? It is not designed to try and engender support for the war. And, of course, we saw Bush do this now for the third day in a row.
Right.
George Bush says that withdrawal from Iraq would embolden terrorists and hurt U.S. interests. You'd think he would have come up with a new line by now. And see, you would have also thought that during all this time he's been on vacation, that he might have spent a little bit of time out of his busy schedule formulating some new bold idea, some new bold initiative in Iraq. What he's doing instead is going mountain bike riding and letting the Iraqis sit there trying to put together a constitution under pressure from his administration. The Iraqis have told him in so many words, hey, this isn't going to work, but he is so desperate for any good news coming out of Iraq that he's prepared to do this. And, of course, he was in Idaho yesterday before he went back to Crawford. And, by the way, Cindy Sheehan also went back to Crawford.
Right.
But he went back, before he went back, he, you know, again draped himself in the soldiers, the National Guards people, et cetera, that are in that region. He apparently singled out a woman who I believe had 5 kids in Iraq or something.
Right.
A woman named Pruitt, and I saw CNN dutifully covering each and every one of the brothers, and that's cool. I honor their service, but I think at a certain point, Bush is very blatantly trying to use military families, pre-screened military families, I might add.
Right.
Military families who are not going to go off the ranch, off the script, to try and counteract the spontaneous movement that Cindy Sheehan has ignited in this country. And it is not going to work, in my judgment. The man has no comment on Pat Robertson. He's got no initiative as far as... He's got nothing. He's got absolutely nothing. And the idea that you can just keep repeating that to withdraw from Iraq would embolden terrorists is absurd as a policy decision.
It's absurd as a policy decision, and it's also absurd because our invasion of Iraq has emboldened terrorists. You want to talk about helping terrorism? You want to talk about emboldening the terrorists? We have created the number one terrorist training ground in the world in Iraq, and it was not that before we went in. So if you want to talk about emboldening terrorists, George Bush is the first person who should be charged with that crime.
Let's go to our telephones. We have someone holding on in Minneapolis listening to KTNF. Let's say good morning to Jenna. Jenna, how you doing?
Hi, Mark. I noticed that you're not the one that got the brain transplant, and I personally think that's because you are the brain.
Well, thank you very much for that. What's on your mind today?
Well, what bothers me is everyone's so busy talking about Pat Robertson, and I don't even think he's the story. It's kind of like Vanity Fair saying that we missed the story last year. The story is that the administration had no comment. They didn't call Pat Robertson a terrorist. They didn't say that he was inciting terrorism. If he had been a Muslim cleric making the same comment about Tony Blair, we would have arrested him as an enemy combatant and put him away for a few years without a trial, without a hearing. But meanwhile, the administration, other than to say it was inappropriate, has been very silent, and I think the whole world is looking at George Bush, waiting for a comment, waiting for him to disassociate himself, and that's the story, and no one's talking about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We did talk about this briefly yesterday, and Jenna, thank you very much for the call. We did mention that as of yesterday, Bush made no comment. As of today, Bush has made no comment. I guess maybe the mountain biking or something is, taking up all of his time. But I think there's a very deliberate calculation to Bush's not saying anything about Pat Robertson, because Pat Robertson, rightly or wrongly, represents a segment of Bush's support.
Yes.
He represents those same people Bush is trying to court with all of that foolishness he's been doing for the last 2 or 3 days.
You're absolutely right, Mark, and it goes a step further than that. Everything you said is correct. On top of that, it is not just the Bush administration. It is also the media that has largely whitewashed this issue, that has largely given Pat Robertson a pass. If it's true that the Bush administration would have reacted drastically differently if this had been a Muslim person who had made this comment, and so too with the mainstream media. Have they reacted differently because it's Pat Robertson? And we have some sound here, Chris, cut number 4, that I want to play from an NBC News report on this Pat Robertson story that I think explains what we're saying and what Jenna is saying exactly perfectly.
This was no extremist cleric issuing a death threat. This was Christian minister Pat Robertson discussing Venezuela's president Hugo Chavez.
Robertson has gotten into hot water before, not just because of what he said, urging Christians, for example, to get mad and take back the nation, but also because of what he's done.
See, listen to those first couple words, Mark. They say this is. I'm quoting the NBC reporter said, "This is no extremist cleric issuing a death threat." Yes, it is.
Well, yeah,
that's
it
exactly
is.
What it is.
It is an extremist cleric who, by the way, I think believes he's got the cover of the administration here.
Absolutely.
He is doing this under the cover and under the auspices of George W. Bush. He knows Bush doesn't like Chavez. He knows that Condoleezza Rice jumped up there and announced the coup in Venezuela before it was done. He knows that there was some covert help offered on the part of the United States to those people who led that referendum that was trying to oust Hugo Chavez, unsuccessfully as it turns out. He's not that stupid. He's not that senile. Although he is a guy who will speak against gambling at the same time he owns racehorses, but I guess he just runs them for fun.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
It is a very, very bizarre situation. And Jenna, who called us from Minneapolis, is absolutely right. Pat Robertson is not the only part of this story. It is the Bush administration. And I got to tell you, it is also up to the Democrats to step up on a lot of levels with Pat Robertson, with Iraq. I would love to have seen a couple of congresspeople and senators actually take a trip out to Camp Casey. I know there were some state senators, I believe, from Minnesota and a couple other places that have been there. And that's great. But how about some other elected officials, some national elected officials? They're all in recess. They can take a look. If Bush can take time to go from Crawford to Idaho, maybe some of our congresspeople and some of our senators from different parts of the country could make that trip to Crawford and show solidarity with Cindy Sheehan. Now, I will say there have been some congresspeople who en masse at the very beginning of this thing sent a letter to Bush asking him to meet with Cindy Sheehan. And that's cool. But maybe it's time for some people to go a little bit forward from that. Maybe it's time for the Democrats to stand up. Later this morning, we're going to be talking with the dean of the New York congressional delegation, Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel. We're going to talk to him about a little bit of this. He is an outspoken guy. He has advocated for a long time now a return to the draft so that the pain of who ends up going to Iraq is spread more evenly among the different income brackets in this country. We'll get to that and a whole lot more. And we're also, you know, I traveled to London a little bit. Dan, I think you've been to London.
I lived there for 6 months.
You lived there for 6 months. Well, you got to be minding your P's and Q's in London. We're going to tell you why next on Air America Radio. It's 46 minutes past the hour.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, king of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
No, Mommy, I'm not taking that girl to the prom.
What? What does that mean? I don't understand.
I just figured I'd get a reaction out of you guys. What can I tell you? It's Morning Condition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. I know it came out of nowhere, didn't it?
I'm a little scared.
Hey, be very afraid. But let me start out by saying thank you to Kristen.
Kristen Barrick.
Kristen Barrick, who is visiting us from Chicago by way of Montana. No less.
Remember yesterday, guys, how we challenged anyone to be the number one fan of Morning Sedition?
Well, she's now it.
Done it.
Yeah, she's done it. She brought us all kinds of swag in here, including bagels, which Dan Pashman is about to eat.
Yeah.
I dogged me one donut, which is why I'm kind of going into a sugar coma.
I can't wait to tell Maron about this, man. He's going to be so pissed that he missed this feast. Maron gets so excited when any food appears in our studio.
Yeah, right? And now I'm going to curl up in the corner of the room here and just go into a womb-like state and give it to Kent Jones. Good morning to you.
The womb-like state. Here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Luckily, we have Mark Maron's iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up. Feed it some headlines. From the Associated Press, Bush bite. All right. You done? Go. From the Associated Press, Bush bikes boats during Idaho vacation. Bush bikes and boats during Idaho vacation. Translation, contusion, drowning experts converge on potato stage. From Sports Illustrated, NCAA to let Florida State keep Seminole mascot. NCAA to let Florida State keep Seminole mascot. Translation, NCAA, heap big liar, speak with forked tongue. From the Associated Press, panel sees growing Meltic Arctic threat. All right. Panel sees growing melting Arctic threat. Translation, Bush administration builds ark, gathers animals.
Thank you very much, Kent Jones. And by the way, I am not the one that came up with this, but I saw a sports show yesterday when they're talking about the Seminoles thing.
Right.
And they said, well, because the argument is, well, we're just trying to honor Native Americans by calling them Seminoles and Redskins and Indians and Braves and Chiefs. So someone got on a sports show yesterday and said, well, if Florida State University really wants to honor the Seminoles, how about you take a chunk of that football money and provide scholarships for Native American kids to go to Florida State?
Why not?
Why not? I mean, that would seem to, that would be a nice way to honor Native American people, if that's what you're really about.
It's kind of like in South Carolina when they said they need to keep the Confederate flag because it's part of Southern history.
Yeah, Southern history. It's part of our heritage.
Right.
Wait a minute. You lynched us. What are you talking about? Yeah. What are you, out of your mind?
Well, Riley, that is part of their heritage.
Yes, it is part of their heritage. It's the part that they don't like to talk about.
Right.
Until there's a team called the Caucasians, I'm out of it.
Yeah. Lord have mercy.
Who will represent Ken Jones?
Uh-oh. So now, I'm trying to figure this one out. In Great Britain, the Home Office has published a list of unacceptable behaviors, which will lead to the deportation or exclusion of any foreign national who commits them from the UK. That means I can't go over there and talk bad about Manchester United or something because I'm an Arsenal fan?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I mean, this is some pretty inclusive stuff.
Yeah.
For example, no one can foment, justify, or glorify terrorist violence in furtherance of particular beliefs.
Well, I guess Pat Robertson can't go there then.
Yeah, he'd be banned. But I guess that also means, though, that you could do all that in furtherance of no particular beliefs.
Right.
Now, it says that you cannot seek to provide or to provoke others to terrorist acts, cannot foment other serious criminal activity, or seek to provoke others to serious criminal acts. Now, what they're trying to do here is to get at the notion that a lot of these people that were involved in these suicide bombings on July 7th and the attempts at bombings on July 21st were homegrown Britons. Obviously, their parents came from other places in most instances, but homegrown Britons who came under the influence of various mentors who were apparently preaching fundamentalist Islam inside the UK. So I think that these kinds of rules are trying to make it more difficult for folks to actually be able to influence, to mentor young people to do this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things that on the surface I'm inclined to say that it makes some sense, but it could very easily be abused.
Very, very easy. But you know what? I would be willing to bet that most people in England right now support those measures. Now, I don't know, Dan, you've never been obese. I've been close, but I've never quite been obese.
I've been closer than I am now.
Yeah, well, there's a guy named Dr. Terry Bennett up in New Hampshire who apparently tells obese patients that their weight is bad for their health and their love lives. But apparently one patient, complained to the state when he told her this.
Yeah.
Now, this is a very, very bizarre thing. A complaint was filed a year ago, was investigated by a panel of the New Hampshire Board of Medicine. And, you know, the kicker to this is apparently this woman lost 150 pounds under Bennett's tutelage. So I don't understand what she's complaining about.
Well, what's the complaint? You know, you go to your doctor to keep you healthy or to make you get healthy, and it sounds like that happened.
Yeah, it would seem to have happened anyway. Well, we're going to talk to you on the telephones when we come back. Oh, God, I did it again. When we return in our next hour here on Morning's Edition, we're going to be talking to Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel and a whole lot more. It's 57 minutes past the hour. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Oh, yeah. Wide awake now. It's 6 minutes past the hour. This is Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. We'll all be on vacation next week up to and through Labor Day.
Speak for yourself.
Hey. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, man. You're here.
Yeah, I'll be here, too.
You'll be here, too?
A show will be on.
Oh, the show will be on?
News yeah. will be said.
I don't care. Doesn't matter to me. I'll be sleeping.
So when you say we'll all, you just mean we, Mark Riley.
Thank you. Y'all catch on quick. Let's say a special good morning to Kristen, who is here from Montana via Chicago, via Queens, via any place else? NYU. Where else?
Vermont.
Oh, Vermont, too. Wow, you world traveler.
Thank
huh?
you for the donuts.
Yeah, thank you for the donuts and the muffins and the bagels and the whole nine yards.
Maron is going to be so pissed that he missed this feast.
Yeah, really. Rachel Maddow is here with us this morning.
Nice
Rachel,
to see you.
Morning. Good to see you.
Yep.
Now, I gotta ask, how many more times can George W. Bush say in public, well, if we pulled out of Iraq, it would embolden the terrorists? And that's exactly it.
Because right now, you know what they are? Shy.
Yeah. Now they're shy.
They're very shy. And they're not attacking us now because they're there. They're not attacking anywhere else other than... you know they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. In fact,
Rachel, I was saying earlier that, you know, I don't think anyone has emboldened the terrorists more than George W. Bush.
Right.
I mean, he has founded and created the world's most successful terrorist training camp, now known as Iraq.
Yeah.
And so when were they ever more bold than they are now?
Well, the idea, too, that he keeps talking about how if we pull out, things are so bad in Iraq that it'll become a safe haven for terrorists, which we created.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
That's what we have done. And so staying there, you're a bull in a china shop, you've broken a lot of china. Staying there and breaking more doesn't undo the problem you've already caused.
You've created in the first place. But here's the central question, folks. What grade would you give the Democrats in following up on Cindy Sheehan's activism to really create a firestorm within the parameters of the Congress inside the Beltway on this issue? Rachel?
D.
D. Dan Pashman?
F.
Wow.
Oh, come on. Fine gold. What fine gold?
Wait a minute.
Matters?
Hold up. Hold up.
Professor, what's your grade?
What is F?
Sorry. But I mean, no, you're right. Russ Feingold has spoken out. Later on this morning, we're going to be talking to Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel. He's spoken out. John Conyers has spoken out. Barbara Lee from San Francisco, quiet as is kept, was the only member of the United States Congress who voted not to give Bush authority to go to war in the first place.
That's right.
It was 3-1. And by the way, she got death threats after that. People don't talk about that much. But Barbara Lee, the congresswoman who I believe took Ron Dellums' place out in the Bay Area, ended up getting death threats. People were ready to string her up for her very principled and now, in hindsight, absolutely correct opposition. But, you know, one of the things I think Bush is trying to do here is play for some kind of time. I mean, you know, between bike rides, he is praying that these Iraqis will come up with this constitution later on today, maybe tomorrow, maybe they'll extend it for another week. We don't know. But I think he is praying that that constitution in and of itself, even though it is hastily drawn, even though it may not do one thing to add to the security of either everyday Iraqis or American soldiers inside the country, I think he believes that this is his brass ring, that if they get that constitution done, he'll have some good news to share with the American people, and he can press on with his non-policy. I would respect the man more, a lot more, if he had come up in front of the American Legion of VFW and said, you know what, I've got a series of initiatives that I think will help us deal with this issue, with what's going on in Iraq. Among other things, we're going to have a supplemental allocation for all veterans and people serving in there, just to give them a one-shot bonus payment, because life is tough. The price of gasoline is going up. People's families have to deal with that. If he came with that and something that said, we're working on a solution, I would have a modicum of respect for this man.
Well, you got to think about all of the times that he's had the opportunity to do that and hasn't. I mean, think about finding out that most of the vehicles don't have adequate armor.
Yes.
When you find that out, you're the president, somebody comes and tells you that, what do? That's like, stop press. Everybody in the West Wing, stop what you're doing right now. How much is it going to cost to get top-of-the-line armor on the front lines within a month? Is it going to cost $10 billion, $20 billion, $30 billion? Is it going to cost one-tenth of what the highway bill cost? Do it.
Yeah.
Do it now. But instead, no, it's 3 years into it. We're still waiting.
And that brings up the very real question of why. Why hasn't he done these things? Why has there been no bold initiative? Why is George W. Bush pursuing a policy that would, makes Lombard Street in San Francisco look straight? And there's nothing to show for it.
I'll tell you why, Mark. Because this administration has had a policy since day one of never, ever, under any circumstances, admitting when they are wrong. And they will go over the cliff and fall all the way down to the bottom of the ravine without ever, ever doing the slightest thing to admit that they were wrong. Rachel, you're 100% right. For them to reconfigure the body armor order, for them to change the order, is to admit that it was wrong in the first place.
Yeah, but it's come up twice now. It just came up last week.
I know.
They didn't even fix it the first time when they had the opportunity, when it became public knowledge, when some guy, a serviceman, stepped to Donald Rumsfeld and said, hey, you know what? We don't have adequate body armor.
But to fix something is to admit that it's broken.
Well,
and they don't do that.
They don't do, you know, the way, I think that you're right to the extent that they decided early on that there was going to be a cakewalk, right? There's going to be flowers, there's going to be candies and sweets in the street, everything's going to be roses. And then when it turned out not to be, when it turned out that the overall plan for invading Iraq, which was invade Iraq, take the oil, and sit pretty, that was the plan.
Right.
They need to acknowledge that they need a real plan, and that means kind of starting over thinking about it from scratch. And that's the kind of thinking that I think you're right, Dan, that they're constitutionally incapable of doing, and it's the soldiers that are suffering for it.
It is the soldiers that are suffering, and as they draft this Constitution, the issue of federalism is going to come up time and again because the question of who controls the oil is intrinsically linked to federalism.
Yeah.
If they allow, for example, the Shiites in the south of Iraq some degree of autonomy, guess what the first thing they're going to do is, as soon as they got a militia, they're going to secure all of those oil fields because that's where the bulk of the oil is. The Kurds got their own thing going on in the north. First thing they're going to do is get rid of all those Arabs Saddam Hussein put in their city, Kirkuk.
Yeah, so we've got a situation where in the north, you've got the Kurds swimming in a sea of oil because they got oil there. Then you got in the south, the Shiites, the majority Shiites, swimming in a sea of oil. And then you've got the minority Sunnis. They're the backbone of the insurgency. They're pissed.
Yeah,
they're pissed. Do they want? They don't want the two groups that have all the oil to secede, because then they're sitting there in the middle of the country with no oil, a hated minority, no resources, and no strong federal government to protect them. If I were a Sunni, I wouldn't be signing up for this thing either.
No, because it would sound to me like they're up a creek without a paddle at a point. And, of course, we still do not know. We'll be tracking this through the rest of the show. But we do not know now exactly when the Iraqi National Assembly is scheduled to meet to get this thing done.
If it's supposed to be today, it does not look like it's going to happen today.
It does not look good. No, it doesn't.
But either way, you know, we've talked time and again about the false endings of the Iraq War. You know, they said when they the fall of Baghdad, that was supposed to be
all the landmarks,
end.
Right?
You know, the elections back in January were supposed to be an end. Now they say the Constitution is going to be another quote unquote, you know, turning point. Well, you know, finally, even Rumsfeld admitted a day or two ago that this isn't really going to change anything. And I think you're absolutely right, Mark Riley, that all of those things, that is what Bush is hoping for. He is desperate for good news. He is hoping this will be a turning point. He is hoping that, you know, that this will be a major flashpoint. But it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And even as all of this goes on, you know, again, his people are the first ones to say, we are at war. But does this guy act or look like a wartime president to anybody? All he does is get up there with that Alfred E. Newman grin and wave at an audience and then say, well, you know, if we pull out, like he's going over there.
Right.
Or like anybody he knows, his kids aren't going over there.
Right.
It's somebody else's kids that are going over there. And later on this morning, we're going to talk with Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel, who has said everybody's kids ought to have the opportunity to go, and we ought to have a draft to make sure that happens. Because at a point, it is poor people's kids, working poor people's kids, who are going over there. And they are not of one mind about whether or not it is a noble cause. Don't let anybody fool you. Don't let that woman that was up there yesterday who has five kids in Iraq, God bless them all. I honor their sacrifice. I really do. But she does not represent the majority thought on whether or not we should be there. She does not.
Bush has made a bad decision in doing this because he's acknowledging, military families have a right to come to the head of the line and be heard, which I agree with, frankly. But what he's saying is military families have the right to come to the front of the line and be heard as long as they agree with me. I still won't meet with the ones who disagree with me.
Right.
And if he wants to start justifying the war in Iraq and all his policies on the basis of public opinion, on the basis of what citizens think about it.
The polls he doesn't read.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The majority of Americans think the war in Iraq was a mistake. So if you want to start talking about public opinion, justifying what you're doing, I'd be happy to go down that road with you, but you don't like where this road ends up.
Right,
this road ends up with the troops coming home.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That's if he's going to go down there, I mean, he's just, I don't know who's advising him. It's not Karen Hughes.
That's right. End it. Period. End. Rachel Maddow, thank you so much.
Thank you.
As always, great
nice to
have
be
you.
Here. Nice to see you guys. Thanks for the donuts.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me, guys. Mark Riley.
Yeah.
We've got Maren Stalker, who's now stalking you.
Oh, no. Come on, man. Not again.
Yep.
Oh, man. I was looking forward to talking to Charles Rangel today. I got to deal with a stalker?
We had to go to break, Riley.
All right. I'll deal with him next here on Air America Radio. It's 17 minutes past the hour.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
21 minutes past the hour. It's Thursday morning, and this is Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on the big vacation. Is he still out in Hawaii, Cashman?
Yeah, I think he's in Hawaii this week, L.A. next week.
Oh, Hawaii this week, L.A. next week. My goodness, what a schedule.
Hey, yeah, Riley, we have the stalker on line one.
Are you kidding me?
Maron stalker, who's now stalking you.
Oh, man. Put him through. What do you want, stalker guy?
Hello, Mark Riley. What are you doing?
I was hosting a radio show till you called. What do you want?
Nothing really, just checking in. Not much going on here, I just...
What?
Nothing, Jesus. It always have to be about the stalking.
So wait, hold up. You're not going to threaten me?
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to be your worst nightmare and all, but, you know...
You know, this is getting a little weird, even for you. Let me dare ask this. Why did you call?
Well, I was wondering if I could borrow a little money.
Say what? You're stalking me and now you want to borrow money from me?
I'll pay you back, Mark Riley. I mean, I am always following you. It's not like I'm going to disappear. Remember, I'm your worst nightmare. That's like special, you know? We're like, look, I just need to borrow like a couple hundred dollars.
$200?
Yeah, like $600.
No, I'm not going to lend you $600.
Oh, come on, Mark Riley. I miss Mark Maron so much. I just need to see him, be near him, stalk him. I know he's in Hawaii. I found a cheap flight on an airline that ships mostly large shipping crates and livestock, but there's a movie.
Look, I gotta go. Maybe you should spend less time stalking and more time looking for a real job. Then you wouldn't have all these money concerns, and you could stalk somebody really fancy, like maybe Tom Cruise.
But I don't want to stalk Tom Cruise. I want to stalk Mark Maron. How about $200? I can take a bus and then look for a barge or a tanker, some kind of an expensive foreign fishing vessel to Hawaii.
No, absolutely not. Goodbye, stalker.
If you hang up on me, I'm going to...
What?
I'm going to stalk you extra hard.
Oh, yeah. You're scaring me. Okay, goodbye.
Let me give my number in case you have a change of heart about the loan.
No!
I could run some errands for you, walk a dog or two.
No!
No? Okay, bye. You bastard.
Oh, man. Listen, Maron's not going to be able to take any more vacations.
Yeah, that guy's
right?
Coming after you, Riley. You better watch out.
Look, I'm a cutter. How about that? Okay?
You're a cutter in the old school sense.
I'm in the old school
sense. You cut other people.
Well, you know, I used to hang around with some guys that used to have those nice gravity knives back in the day.
Gravity knife? What does that mean?
You just kind of like flick it out like that, now comes the knife.
Oh, okay.
You know, well, it's a long story. I was young, it was a long time ago.
That's called a gravity knife?
It was then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could just wonder if it was like a switchblade or something.
No, that's the one that actually you pop a button on the side of the knife and the blade comes
out.
Yeah,
my brother used to have one of those. You had to do a specific hand twirl.
Are you talking about a K-55?
Oh, a butterfly knife.
Oh, a butterfly knife.
I used to have one of those switchblade things where you press the button and it pops up, but it was a comb instead of a knife.
Oh, Lord.
Wait. So what's a gravity knife? Is it one of those knives that you can like hold upside down and it still kills people?
No!
Like, you flick it with the pens?
No.
You can kill people while you're hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, there you go. Matrix action. That's it.
Oh, I don't understand. What is it?
It's just a knife that where the blade comes out when you flick it.
I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, Google.
Did you ever break up any crazy gravity knife fights back in the day, Riley?
No, man. I was a peaceful guy, man. I was a lover,
right,
not
I'm
a fighter.
You would break up the fights.
No. Well, I stand by the side and say, hey, you guys shouldn't do that. Didn't always stop things, right. But what are you going to do? So, you know, I don't know what to do about poor Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Lance Armstrong has suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous Tour de France directors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous what they're doing to this guy to a certain extent. Now, I don't know whether he took this performance-enhancing drug that this magazine, L'Équipe?
L'Équipe, yeah.
Yeah, has alleged. Now, Dan, you established last hour, the French, for whatever sets of reasons, hate Lance Armstrong. That's not all French people, but, you know, in general, it looks like they really resent his having come over there and essentially guerrillaed the Tour de France championship for the last 7 years.
Yeah, kicking their asses over and over and over again.
Yeah, and it's not like they've come up with a dope test from last year or the year before or sometime in the 21st century, for God's sake. Instead, they go back to 1999. They go back to a urine sample that he gave anonymously.
Right.
They say that the numbers that they got from the laboratory and the numbers that they have on the sample match and that it's Armstrong's. The head of the Tour de France, the director, Mr. LeBlanc, says that this is proof positive that Lance Armstrong took performance-enhancing drugs. Lance Armstrong, for his part, says, no, I never did that. Now, you know, it would be really sad if it turns out he did, because then he and Rafael Palmeiro would have been jinxed by George W. Bush.
Yeah, right.
You know, because they both, you know, were hanging out with the guy for a minute. Next thing you know, they both have steroids allegations around their heads.
It's true, Riley. But I am standing by Lance Armstrong for now. The French have been hell-bent on taking him down. And this newspaper, they keep... is tied to the Tour de France Commission, the people who run that event, and they have all been hell-bent. This newspaper is like, they are to Lance Armstrong what Fox News is to Democrats.
They are
twisted, and they've been hell-bent on taking him down, and I'm not buying it.
All right. This is one issue we are not going to talk about with our next guest, the Dean of the New York Congressional Delegation, Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel, joins us as Morning Sedition continues. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
God, I love this song. 34 minutes past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. Our next live broadcast will be our biggest ever. We'll be at the New School on Friday, September 9th. That's the New School right here in New York City. We'll have former Senator Bob Kerrey and The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. That's Friday, September 9th at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. Our next guest has been representing New York's 15th Congressional District for nearly 35 years. We are honored to have him on the phone with us right now. He's the Dean of the New York Congressional Delegation, the Honorable Charles Rangel. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Terrific.
Good, good. You know, the other day we had Bob Herbert on the air with us, and he was talking about the Iraq War, and he said something, and actually he wrote this in a column, and I thought about you immediately. He said the only way to solve the problem of some of the inequities in terms of who's going over to fight the war in Iraq was to, A, stop the unnecessary war, or B, reinstate the draft. And I'm going to ask you the same question I asked him. Which one of those two do you think is more likely?
I think both of them are going to merge into each other. The administration is utterly confused as to what to do. Mark, if the terrorists want to give up or surrender tomorrow, we wouldn't have the slightest clue as who the terrorist is. 70% of the troops that are being killed are not being killed directly in hand-to-hand combat, but having these explosions along the road.
Sure.
And even Rumsfeld admitted that we have created more terrorists by our invasion than we're killing. And so it's an endless war, but the casualties continue. So why do I say it's going to be both? Well, if the people on the ground are saying that they're going to send back home some troops before the election, and then others are saying that in order to end the war, we got to send 50,000, 100,000 troops over there. And then we find, even though we're giving $40,000 per enlistee, that we can't reach our mark and that the reservists are not making their quota. The president is in a catch-22. He will have to resort to a draft because clearly there's no appeal for middle-class kids to be going over there and put their lives in jeopardy, and they don't need the $30,000 in order to enlist. And so we're not going to have a draft. But when the draft becomes the only alternative in order to build up our armed forces, they'll find a way to get out of Iraq. If you listen carefully, the latest speeches of the president is not that we're going to win the war against terrorism, but we're going to train the Iraqis to continue the fight against terrorism. That's a hell of a lot different than what he got us involved with in the first place.
Congressman, You know, the Washington Post ran a story a few days ago that suggested that Cindy Sheehan, who now is back in Crawford, Texas, was doing more to challenge the president than an awful lot of elected Democrats. In other words, an awful lot of your colleagues. How do you respond when you see that sort of thing?
Well, she lost the kid. And if most Americans would understand that support the war, that their kids will be placed in danger the same way she lost hers just yesterday. I had a widow collapse in my arms. She lost a 28-year-old husband in Iraq. And it's an eerie feeling when the family comes to you and asks why. You don't know whether they're asking why did God take their loved ones or what. And so you're 100% right. There are a lot of politicians who truly believe that in times of war, support the president, right or wrong. But we find now that only 30% of Americans support the president in the war, and politicians will be following the leaders. The leaders are going to be the voters, so there's no question in my mind that you're going to see a change in attitude. I don't know why some of the members who voted for the war can't tell the truth and just say that they were misled by the president. The whole nation was scared. We had 9-1-1. We had nuclear scares. We had Colin Powell saying that there was nuclear materials in Iraq, and he had the utmost credibility. It was supposed to be connected with Al-Qaeda, but there's not one scintilla of evidence that justifies the president taking a preemptive strike against Saddam Hussein, except oil.
Our guest is Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel. Congressman, at the very beginning of this conflict, you predicted many of the things that we're seeing come to pass. And I have to ask you, because we're hearing various and sundry estimates from both military people and elected officials about how much longer and at what troop level the American presence will remain in Iraq. Who are we to believe? The latest is that we're going to be sending about 1,500 additional troops, I guess, to help with the referendum that's coming up. But we also hear stories that they're going to try and start withdrawing troops to the point that they'll have 60-some-odd thousand by the election next year. There are other people who say that they're planning for a four-year window to keep troops at the troop strength at current levels. Who are we to believe in all this? Who do you believe?
Well, it's clear at the recent press conference that the president was rambling at that he said that we cannot look forward to any troop reduction. And it was the general that was on the ground that said that next year there would be a troop reduction. Mark, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. This attack that we've had has brought in terrorists from all over the world. They have brought them. Iraq is a much more dangerous place today than it was before the war, and there have been hundreds of thousands of people that have been killed over there. And so, if you ask, how do you win the war? I mean, do you drop a bomb, an A-bomb? Who surrenders? What does the terrorist look like? What uniform? What flag would be there? Does he or she surrender a sword? What are we talking about in terms of victory? You can't have a victory when you go into a foreign country and scare the hell out of all of the people, and in retaliation of people shooting at you, you're destroying their lives. They don't even call them lives of Iraqis. It's collateral damage.
Incredible.
And it is so sad to hear the churches and the synagogues so silent during the time of taking of life. It's so bizarre that Pat Robinson, a minister, is now saying we should assassinate people. And the good people are just don't want to get involved. You go to any minister, any rabbi, any imam, and they'll tell you that this war is immoral. There's no justification for it at all. We made a mistake. Maybe if they thought you could go in and get out, and we would be more secure, it would be illegal, it would be immoral, but it would happen so fast. But we got caught into this damn thing, and you can never get out of a bad situation until you first admit that you made a mistake.
Absolutely.
Say it was bad intelligence. Say the British misled you. Say We were so anxious to do it that we didn't think this thing out. I heard an interview yesterday of Senator Lott where this guy says, yes, we were leaning in support of the bad information, the bad intelligence, because that's what we wanted to hear. But if we had to do it again, I think I would, because I don't want a Monday morning quarterback. Now, when you've lost 1,800 lives, minimum, and you're not even counting the lives of those people who died after they left, when you know that you have 25,000, 50,000 young people maimed and wounded, when you know that you have no game plan at all in terms of when this is going to stop, then it's time to take a deep breath and say, this is wrong. And it's politicians find it very difficult to publicly change their positions. But once the public says, I'm just fed up with this, you can bet your life they'll find some reason. I am confident, Mark, that when we get back in session and Republicans and Democrats have been home and listened to the families of those that have lost their loved ones, you're going to see a change of attitude in the House of Representatives and the Senate. Believe me.
All right. Congressman, we're just about out of time. You mentioned Pat Robertson earlier. Do you think that the president should say something publicly to repudiate Pat Robertson's statements about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez?
I don't think the president's aware what the hell's going on. I don't expect anything that civil or that intelligent from the president. Any person should know that you don't have to be a man or woman of God in order to not to encourage the assassination and the killing of someone else. But they are so caught up with this Sidney Sheehan and the war that I think it was Rumsfeld who said that the man's entitled to his opinion. No one's entitled to an opinion that advocates the killing of a human being.
Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel, thank you so much for being with us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thanks for doing a great job, Mark.
You take care.
Right.
Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel, he says he doesn't even think President Bush has a clue what's going on with Pat Robertson. God, he can't be that far out of touch. We're going to take a quick break, come back with much, much more. And we've got coming up, oh, no, we don't have that coming up. Radio Theater is coming up. And later on, we're going to be talking with Camp Casey live here on Air America Radio. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents Karaoke with Mark Riley's stirring rendition of MacArthur Park.
Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh, no. And Wayne Gilman singing James Brown.
Get up off of that thing and try to release that pressure. Wait a minute, so funky. I need it. Sunshine good. Good God.
This has been Karaoke with Mark Riley and Wayne Gilman on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
I'm calling my agent. Who got me this gig? My goodness.
Right, I never imagined you'd be so good at karaoke.
Listen, I hate karaoke, okay? I am one of the few Americans who says I have no time or no love whatsoever for karaoke. You know why?
Why?
Because it's taken the place of actual paid entertainment. You have people that go to bars and think they can sing, and that entertains people, instead of actually having people who can sing at a bar entertaining people.
Right, that argument is terrible. That's like saying, oh, well, you know, like people are actually trying to do things, you know? They're trying
Let them do things at their job!
No, but it's entertaining to watch people. It's funny to watch people try to sing and perform who aren't performers.
Yeah, it's also funny to watch people, you know, drive off a cliff. I don't know, but for me, karaoke is not fun to me, you know? I mean, if I want to hear people sing, I want to hear people sing who can do it.
Well, Riley, you've never seen my...
Yes.
You've never seen my rendition of the Humpty Dance.
Oh, you know... and you go to karaoke there, Chris Lopresto?
Yes, I go to karaoke and I listen to people and I watch them sing.
You ever sing?
Yes, I do.
You sing?
What's your specialty, Kalo?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a specialty.
Yeah, what's your specialty?
I don't have a specialty. My girlfriend has a specialty. It's what is it? It's something about having sex in the afternoon. Afternoon delight.
My fiance's specialty is I touch myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. How did we get into this sexually oriented tunnel in here? What's going on? And we have a guest in the studio, and you're going down. What? Never mind.
I DJ karaoke.
You do karaoke also?
I used to DJ, yeah.
You DJ karaoke.
DJ karaoke.
Or KJ, they unfortunately like to call it.
Oh, God. You know what it really is that I don't like about karaoke? The sound systems that they use for karaoke are uniformly crap.
Well,
crap!
Riley, it's not supposed to sound professional. That's the whole idea.
No, it's supposed to sound pleasing to the ear.
Right.
Whether it's professional or not, pleasing.
Speaking of sound, I actually have a sound clip of the last time we were talking about karaoke, and this is what Mark Riley says is the sound of people who can't do karaoke.
That's right. Yeah, what was that karaoke?
So we have Kristen Barrick here. She brought us some food.
Thank you very much.
A karaoke DJ. Kristen, have you ever heard anyone make that sound while coming to karaoke?
That, but softer.
Oh. Yeah, that's the one. Right, what was I singing to, by the way? Do you remember, Chris?
Oh, I do not know.
Yeah, that's right. Because I don't do karaoke.
Now,
damn it.
Now, what?
It's a useful tool. It's so... I think it's like therapy in
ways. What's the most like requested song or performed song?
Depending on if it's like a country bar from the area of the country that I'm in or a college bar. I mean, people sing Love Shack, and you're going to get that constantly.
The right. B-52s?
Oh, yeah.
I would get
like Grease songs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's
when they
the
get
worst.
To that high note.
I got chills.
Somebody give this boy a donut, quick.
Right. It's 54 past the hour. It's karaoke time.
That'll wake people up.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, well, I would actually think that The Gambler by Kenny Rogers could be the number one most karaoke song.
The Gambler's also very nice. Anything that's like a group sing-along. Sweet Caroline.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sweet Neil Diamond's.
Oh, no, that's a great tune.
Yeah.
That's classic karaoke.
Any song that everyone knows.
This proves exactly why I hate karaoke.
It's a great outlet.
Outlet. There's a great outlet. You put a prong in it and it electrifies something. That's a great outlet. Right?
And some of them need that.
A dollar store is a great outlet. Karaoke is not a great outlet.
But to express yourself, not everyone has this kind of medium where you can get up and say whatever you want, or sing whatever you want, or do whatever you want.
See,
with karaoke, you're given a mic even when you're drunk.
Especially.
See, I just never found the joy of it.
Say anything.
Well, you know, we have one of our colleagues, News Daddy, Wayne Gilman. I think he may actually do karaoke every now and then. He may do Spanish karaoke up in Upper Manhattan, I think. But yeah. It's just never been something.
I want to hear what Wayne has to say about it.
Wayne is a dancer. He's not a singer.
Wayne Gilman, tell us about your karaoke expertise.
I don't believe in karaoke.
Yeah.
I don't believe in embarrassing myself.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, the funny thing that occurred to me as I was driving in here, I heard you tell a big canard, Mr. Riley.
Canard? What, you mean the shipping line?
No. I'm talking about the fact that you said you're not obese.
You got some nerves.
You know.
Oh, snap.
Wait a minute, oatmeal boy.
He's got some cream over there for his coffee, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, I got cream.
I would drop that first.
This is just coffee made the original.
Yeah.
You got some nerve calling me a beast.
Well, I've known you for some 30 years.
Mr. Tuna salad and french fries for breakfast.
No, I'm not eating that anymore.
Now you got gruel instead.
No.
Big lumpy gruel.
Listen.
Yeah. I know what time it is.
We're going to have to get a scale in here. You guys are going to have a weigh-in. We're going to have to see who's more obese between the two of you.
Well, I'm going to tell you, he'll win hands down. That's right. Just because he showed up at Amy Roos last week with a sleeveless shirt on. Mr. Muscle Beach. Where do you think you are, in California or something? Get out of here.
I intend to.
All right. Have a nice trip right as you get work.
Right. Riley is patent-free to say when someone's leaving.
That's right. Now, look, well, you know, now we don't even have time to talk about those base closings that are not going to happen now. Out in New London, a couple, I think one up in Maine, too, up in Portsmouth. The Portsmouth Naval Shipyard in Kittery, Maine, is also going to remain open. Rumsfeld wanted to close them, but that base closure and realignment commission said no. Now, they did say yes to closing by an 8-1 vote, Fort Monmouth in New Jersey. And there are going to be other base closings around the country. These things are always wrenching because, on the one hand, people do want to see the military downsize. But on the other hand, when the jobs get lost, somebody's saying, well, wait a minute, where are all these people going to work?
Right.
And certainly in the case of New London, that is an economic engine that drives the entire eastern part of the state of Connecticut.
And, of course, Republican, or mostly Republican, Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, who seems to have disappeared for the past few months. Well, now we know what he's been doing. Well, you haven't heard his name in the news. He's been in the back rooms of Congress, glad-handing with his fellow Republicans, working some deals to help save his home bases.
Well, yeah, because he wants to make sure he gets reelected next time around, and people in Connecticut would hold him strictly accountable.
Yeah.
Now, we are going to shortly be going to Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas. We're going to be talking with our friend Karen Meredith, who is going to be joining us in the next hour. We're also going to talk about Arctic warming, a hole in the ozone, and George Bush as a big gas consumer. All coming up on Morning's Edition. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. It's Morning's Edition. My name is Mark Riley, and today's secret word is gruel. we'll get into that a little bit later.
We will?
We're going to get into gruel.
Memo.
Huh? We got a gruel recipe from our good friend News Daddy Wayne Gilman, because he's an expert on it. At any rate, it is our final hour of this Thursday morning. And, boy, there's a lot of stuff going on out here. Lots and lots of stuff. That Iraqi Constitution is I guess coming and going? I don't know. They are supposed to have a meeting, the National Assembly, to ratify it. No one seems to know exactly when that's going to take place.
Yeah, you shouldn't feel bad that you don't know, Riley, because I don't think they know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows at this point. We mentioned earlier that some military bases are going to stay open, particularly in New England. One in New Jersey is still going to close. So it looks like that commission, whose job it was to oversee the Pentagon's decisions on these base closings, has decided to kind of jump ship on Donald Rumsfeld just a little bit. George W. Bush is back in Crawford, and so is Cindy Sheehan. And I'm certainly happy about one of those two being back in Crawford, Texas, that's for sure. Cindy Sheehan arrived in Waco Airport yesterday, and this is what she had to say.
The hardest thing for me to hear, I don't care about them talking about me being a crackpot or a media whore or a tool of the left, you know. I'm like, if I truly was a media whore, do you think I would, like, maybe get myself fixed up a little bit before I went on? That doesn't bother me at all, but what bothers me so much is when they say I'm dishonoring my son's memory by what I'm doing.
It's incredible. She's back in Camp Crawford, or actually back in Camp Casey, and we're going to be talking with her tomorrow morning. Today we are going to be talking to our good friend Karen Meredith, also from Gold Star Families for Peace. Her son, Kenneth Ballard, was killed in Najaf at the age of 26 back in May of 2004. So we'll be talking to her, actually momentarily, here on Morning's Edition. It is one of those days, Dan Pashman, where you expect something to happen over in Iraq, but we're not quite sure what. You know, yesterday I don't think anybody could have predicted that Shia would be fighting Shia on the streets of several Iraqi cities.
Well, you're absolutely right, Mark. Excuse me. A lot of things are going to happen. Some of them are difficult to predict, but there are certain things that are going to happen in Iraq today that we can all be pretty confident are going to happen. Someone's probably going to die. Unfortunately, there's a good chance that that an American service person is going to be killed. In fact, my statistic of the day, my fact of the day today, Riley, 73 American service members have been killed in Iraq since George W. Bush went on vacation.
73?
73 killed since he went on vacation.
You know, some people in the Defense Department would argue, in spite of all of the laudatory things they say about the fallen U.S. soldiers, that the 1,800-some-odd who have died thus far are an acceptable casualty level for this kind of conflict. Now, people aren't going to come out and say that publicly, but you can bet inside the Pentagon, that's what they're saying. They are saying this is acceptable. We can have 1,800 Americans lose their lives because that's not really that many. Not when you compare it to 55,000 in Vietnam and the hundreds of thousands who died during World War II, World War I, and some of the other conflicts. They, you know, 1,800 to them, to military people, is not that bad a count. But, of course, that's cold comfort to the people who have actually lost sons and daughters inside Iraq.
You're right, Mark, and it's also cold comfort to all those of us who know that this war was based on lies, and who know that rather than reducing terrorism, it has actually created the world's largest terrorist training camp. So yes, that makes those deaths that much harder for us to accept.
Absolutely. And we mentioned that Cindy Sheehan will be back with us on Morning Sedition tomorrow morning. This morning, though, we are pleased to welcome back Gold Star mother Karen Meredith, who joins us live from Crawford. Good morning, Karen. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us again. Are you heading out of Crawford today? Is that right?
I have a previous engagement back in the Bay Area for the weekend, so I just booked my ticket and I'm coming back on Monday.
All right. What has it been like for you this week at Camp Casey?
The outpouring of affection and respect and love that everybody has given, it's kind of hard to explain unless you're here because it sounds so new agey and, oh, what are they doing? In fact, last night somebody was walking around blowing bubbles, and I went, oh, please, we're really weird if we do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we now see President Bush for the third day in a row essentially speaking indirectly to Cindy Sheehan, saying essentially the same thing he has been saying over and over again, which is that to withdraw troops from Iraq as she requests would embolden terrorists and endanger U.S. national security. Do you think the fact that he keeps saying it over and over again means that people are going to start believing it?
No. Did we believe Baghdad Bob when the American forces were invading Baghdad and he said they were nowhere near? You know, Bush just keeps saying it and wants people to believe it, but more and more people are looking at the numbers and saying, it doesn't add up what you're saying. And by the way, the number is 1,873 today.
1,873.
Karen, this is Dan Pashman. I'm curious, yesterday afternoon, Bush and Cindy Sheehan both returned to Crawford. What was that like? How has that changed the feeling at the camp in the past 12 to 15 hours?
Well, a lot of things have changed. I was actually at the airport to greet Cindy, and it was kind of a frantic environment. I think there was twice as much press as there were people in our little caravan. So I think if it had been me, it would have been very overwhelming. But Cindy took it all in stride. I think, as she said, half of her heart was always here, even though she was in California. But the one thing that big thing has changed is our friends who sit on the other side of the street, literally, have really, really brought out their big guns this weekend. And where we have all of the crosses that line, the 500 crosses that go down the long rural road, they have lined it. And it just looks obscene.
Wait, Karen, I'm sorry. I have a question here. How did those people get to be across the street from you? I mean, until you guys got permission to be on someone's private property, Crawford officials and Bush's people were keeping you guys a few miles down the road.
I don't know. We heard somebody donated some land for these people, you know, that, okay, you can stay on my land. Because literally, we're on the side of the road in a ditch. But these people have put up these ugly Bush signs, and it's just the contrast between those Bush political signs versus the crosses that are across the road. It's an interesting perspective. But so they're bringing out a lot of people, and that's the change that we've seen. For us, it was respectful. You know, everybody was so pleased to have Cindy back. She stopped at the first site, left flowers at Casey's Cross, and Joan Baez sang again last night, and Cindy talked to us, and she was just glad to be back.
Now, Karen, we saw yesterday President Bush invoking a woman who I believe has five sons in Iraq and who supports his policy. And obviously, this was speaking in direct response to the movement that Cindy Sheehan certainly has represented. Do you expect the president to continue to indirectly speak to her like this and to bring other people who support his positions to the public table?
Oh, of course he will. He's getting desperate. People are talking about the war and questioning it, and he has to keep finding people who support him, but the number who do not support this war is growing.
Certainly is. Karen Meredith, thank you so much for being with us this morning. As always, it's a real pleasure.
Thank you.
You take care.
All right, bye-bye.
And we should remind people, Karen's with Gold Star Families for Peace, which Cindy Sheehan co-founded. Their website is gsfp.org. You can also go to Karen's son's website. Her son, Kenneth Ballard, was killed in Iraq in May 2004. And that website is ltkenballard.com. In other words, Lieutenant Ken Ballard, but just ltkenballard.com. Really a beautiful site, tribute to her son.
Absolutely. We're going to talk, we're going to shift gears a little bit, talk about ecology, talk about the environment, because among other things that are going to hell in the handbasket under George W. Bush, the air we breathe, the water we drink, all those things are also problematic, and we're going to discuss that as we return here on Morning Sedition. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. It is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation, and we are going to shortly be talking about the environment and some things that are going, including, by the way, these new fuel efficiency standards that they've come up with that I, quite frankly, Dan Pashman, can't figure out for the life of me. Whether they actually are an improvement. But we're going to find out, because Betsy Rosenberg, who, of course, hosts the show Eco Talk here on Air America Radio, is going to be on with us momentarily to shed some light on that. But we have a caller, I believe, who is joining us on the telephone right now. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Robin, how you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm heading back from Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas, to Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, wow. Okay. And you went out to Camp Casey when? Just a few days ago?
I went on Sunday.
Oh, you okay?
Sunday.
What drove you out there? What made you decide to go?
I guess, I worked election protection. I'm an attorney, and I've been very upset with the administration, and obviously for the same as everybody else. And I had a feeling of hopelessness. I haven't spoken to a Republican practically since November.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I actually called once to try to confess my sins of not speaking to any Republicans.
That's not a sin here.
Well, no, it's not. But, I just felt that there was a movement going and I needed to go and be support, particularly even during the week when there was not going to be as many people as during the weekend. It was great to be there. It was a very interesting mix of people who are activists like me, and even though, I'm a 45-year-old mother who worked, for elections, and I'm very much in favor of our Constitution, and I'm a Democrat. But there were a lot of people who I never expected to be with, people who never expected themselves to be activists.
Like
basically,
who?
The families of people who have sons, who have people in Iraq and Afghanistan, and people who are families of National Guard who, spouses who expected to be helping our country for tornadoes and hurricanes, and are now doing the second tour of duties in Iraq.
Oh, really? So these are people who might have been pro-war at some point, huh?
I don't think you're ever pro-war. I think you're pro-national defense.
Okay.
You're not really pro-abortion. You're pro-choice.
Right. Okay. So some of these people did support the president, though, previously.
Some of them did, and they felt they were being lied to. There were people who were Republicans who were sort of walking around there who thought they were Republicans, and were very sort of much testing the water. I felt very bad, almost like glomming onto them, but they were very happy that we were there to support them.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic that people just went to support, who went to be a part of this, because that's how movements grow.
Yeah.
It wasn't, and Joan Baez was there, and she was just sort of among us, and wanted to be one among us. And she was also wonderful. She was very supportive to the families, and she, you know, cooked with us and swam with us. And, you know, I got up in the morning and, you know, country onions to make food for everybody.
Now, Robin, you said when you went down there, before you got there, you had a feeling of hopelessness about some things happening in our country. Did that feeling change after being down at Camp Casey?
It felt like that people back home, you know, Atlanta, you feel very isolated very often. I met two other people from Atlanta, but there were people from all over the country, from Alaska, from Minnesota, New York, California, Ohio, a lot of people from Ohio. There's a feeling like maybe even the people who don't agree with you, some people are supportive in back home, and some people think I'm nuts, but at least they're thinking maybe.
Well, we're not among those who think you're nuts. We think you did a great thing going out there, and we appreciate your phone call to us this morning.
Well, thank you for taking my phone call. I appreciate it. I really missed you all through Louisiana, and well, we don't have you in Alabama, so I'm waiting to get back to so I can hear you in Air America.
Fantastic. All right, Robin.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks,
okay,
Robin.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's what I like about our audience, man. People call us from the road.
That's right.
Alabama.
But that's real activism right there, Riley. I mean, she's a mother, 45 years old. She went out for a couple of days to show her support, and I really feel like, you know, the Cindy Sheehan thing, her presence in Crawford is galvanizing people. People like Robin who felt alone. They felt like they had nowhere to direct their feelings, and now they have a way to direct those feelings.
Yes, absolutely. You know, Dan, I'm kind of perplexed here. We've got stories that are talking about problems, environmental problems.
Yes.
Both in the Arctic and in the Antarctic.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing.
From pole to pole.
Apparently, there's a panel of researchers who are saying that the rate of ice melting in the Arctic is going to be problematic within a century. That melting could lead to summertime ice-free ocean conditions not seen in a million years. A million years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
I would say that is a long time. And that could, by the way, raise sea levels. It could create huge flooding. It could create tsunamis, the likes of which would make the one last Boxing Day, December 26th last year, seem small by comparison.
I think that a lot of people like to dismiss scientific findings like this as extremist and alarmist. But the fact is that any respectable scientist, any real scientist anywhere in the world knows that global warming is real, knows that it is happening, knows that it is affecting our climate here and now today as we speak, and that it is only getting worse every year.
Yeah, everybody, it seems, except our president,
right,
who seems like this is no big deal, and he doesn't want to stand in the way of Americans getting jobs. Now, on the other end of the world, the winter hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica has grown from last year, still smaller than it was in 2003. But we're talking now about a hole in September 2003 of 29 million square kilometers, which translates to 11 million square miles. Now it's about 25 million square kilometers. That's a huge hole.
It's scary stuff, Riley. And you know, the thing is, yes, it went, you know, 2003 was the worst ever. It had been getting progressively worse until 2003. And then in 2004, the hole started to shrink. And we really thought we had finally turned the tide and we were making some progress. But thanks largely to the anti-science, anti-environmental stances taken by the Bush administration, we have now begun to reverse the progress that we had made from 2003 to 2004. The hole has now started getting bigger again after we had begun shrinking it, and that's not a promising sign for any of us.
Well, yeah, and you know what causes the hole in the ozone layer? Industrial chemicals!
Yes.
And, you know, for whatever reasons, we don't seem to be able to wean ourselves off that. We also don't seem to be able to wean ourselves off gas-guzzling motor vehicles.
Right.
And there's been some changes made in the standard for big automobile companies to measure gas mileage. We'll get to that when we talk to Betsy Rosenberg, host of Eco Talk, right here on Air America Radio. That's coming up next. It's Morning's Edition at 27 minutes past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 minutes past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. My name is Mark Riley. And shortly, you're going to be hearing Morning Sedition Radio Theater. But right now, there are some significant developments in the world of politics and the environment over the past couple of days. And Betsy Rosenberg, the host of Air America Radio's Eco Talk, joins us on the telephone from California to tell us all about it. Betsy, good morning.
Good morning. Although, if I tell you about all the bad environmental news, you may not feel that way by the time we finish talking.
Well, Betsy, let me ask you to enlighten me a little bit about these new gas mileage standards that have tentatively been put forward. I've been trying to figure out whether they're good or bad. It's making my head hurt.
Well, it's good and bad.
Okay.
First of all, if you don't know much about the situation with our nation's fuel efficiency, which has been going down for the last couple of decades, there's a big headline, for instance, in our San Francisco Chronicle yesterday, new auto standards fuel debate. Administration boasts of gasoline savings. Critics point to loopholes. So the good news is that the administration is doing something. The bad news is it's almost too little too late. And by that I mean it is a few years late and a couple of dozen miles per gallon short. Several months after 9/11, the Senate voted to improve CAFE standards. Of course, CAFE standards in this context have nothing to do with Morning Java. It's corporate average fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you average all of the cars in any one company's fleet has to be at a certain miles per gallon. Now, that would have been a good time to do such a thing since we had just been attacked, and we know that it had something to do with oil, and the Republicans mostly were calling to drill in Anwar. Things were so desperate, and our Senate, you know, went under Trent Lieselot's leadership saying if we improve CAFE standards, we'll all be driving purple people eaters. It will be the death of the SUV. And they basically, it was the representatives in the car-producing states mostly who, you know, just bowed to the auto industry. So they voted against improving CAFE standards. If they had gone ahead at that point, and that was an effort, a bipartisan effort, you may recall, led by John Kerry and John McCain,
right,
we would have been well on our way to driving vehicles that get 36 miles per gallon. Now, mind you, these things don't happen overnight. So that didn't happen. And so what is being proposed now is an incremental change. It's going to take place over years. We won't see any of this take place till around 2010, 2011 is when it starts kicking in. And in the end, the best we're going to see is less than 3 miles per gallon improvement. So the good news is something's better than nothing. The bad news is there are loopholes in here that could make us actually go backwards.
But, Betsy, doesn't this attempt to tighten standards to some extent run counter to America's consumption habits? It seems like the only time most people care about gas mileage is when gas costs a lot of money. And we've seen, for example, during the oil embargoes during the 70s, there was a concern about gas mileage. There was a concern about conservation. Jimmy Carter talked about waging war on the consumption of fossil fuels from outside the U.S. But as soon as the price of gas goes down, everything changes, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and back then we were a smarter nation. Remember, we've gotten dumbed down over the last couple of decades, and we have no memory. We don't remember what happened then when the Japanese-based car companies came in and, you know, took market share from, you know, Chrysler, and we taxpayers had to bail them out. So that's part of the problem is we don't have any collective memory. But the situation here is so much more urgent and so much more dire. And you're right. It's rising gas prices that may ultimately do more than this initiative will do, because Americans are finally waking up to the fact that we can't just be driving these giant wasteful gas guzzlers, you know, and going out for a Sunday drive without consequences. But it's not just to our pocketbook, of course, and it's not just in terms of pollution, but it's affecting our economy. I mean, yesterday oil hit another record high. I think it was $68 a barrel, and the stock market goes down. The plummets. I mean, that's what people have to start connecting the dots on, that this isn't just about the environment, although we certainly are messing that up. And by the way, I like to say our environment, because the air out there is going to be the air in here as soon as I take a breath. Right? It's all connected. You know, we are part of nature. It's not the nature you get in your SUV and go out to. That's not just what we're trying to protect here, right?
Absolutely.
That's right. We're talking to Betsy Rosenberg. She's the host of Eco Talk here on Air America Radio. It airs Sundays from 7 to 8 a.m. And, Betsy, one thing I'm noticing about this fuel economy plan is that it conflicts with the air quality rules passed in California, and other states, including New York, are trying to move forward. And some of the individual states, they have been pushing in their own states to have much stricter fuel efficiency standards and air purity standards than what the federal government is pushing for. I think that's kind of interesting, first of all, because, you know, for many years we heard Republicans cry about states' rights. They said, you know, the federal government should give the power back to the states. Of course, once they get in charge of the federal government, all of a sudden they want to say, screw the states, we're going to go with a federal policy. But tell us how this tension is playing out between the states that want to go further than the Bush administration.
Well, you almost think that they're doing this just to mess up our efforts to clean up our air here in California.
Right.
You know, that would not be putting it, you know, too far past them. I don't know. It's ridiculous. California was the first state in the nation to limit vehicle emissions of greenhouse gases, and that's a slightly different approach. It doesn't affect miles per gallon as much as reducing the emissions that come out of our tailpipes, and that was an initiative led by Assemblywoman Fran Pavley here. And that would reduce our emissions by about 20%, beginning with car models in 2009. Now, of course, the auto industry is fighting that. Instead of, you know, spending money to, you know, innovate, they're litigating, okay? And that's part of the other problem here. And other states have followed suit. Washington and Oregon are getting ready to adopt the same emission standards that we have here, and that would give us a clean air corridor, a clean car corridor, as they call it, from Canada to Mexico. We'd be ahead of the rest of the country. But New York, good for you, has followed California's lead and is about to adopt its own similar legislation. And so, of course, you know, the White House comes in and says, gee, we're not being very green. We've got record high gas prices. Of course, they wouldn't acknowledge that the war, terrorism has anything to do with our oil addiction. We better do something. So they come out with this program that sounds good if you don't know better and you don't read beyond the headlines. And most Americans don't, frankly, short attention spans, but it's really not. It's so little that it, you know what it is? We're moving the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. We are in a crisis on so many levels, and I'm just talking about, you know, what's happening with climate change, what's happening with our oceans, what's happening with our air. We're fiddling while Rome is burning. This is just not enough, and there's no leadership here. So they come out with something that sounds good, like everything else, like clear skies and healthy forests, but if you look closer, it's really probably going to set us back. And they could mess up what's going on in California, New York, Washington, Oregon, and those other states. That could now be challenged.
Now, Betsy, one thing that's been in the news a couple of times recently that's really piqued my interest, and I want you to tell us more about it. I read one story in the last couple of weeks about an engineer out on the West Coast who spent $3,000 on his own. I believe he already had a hybrid car, and he basically rewired the thing to get way more miles per gallon than your typical hybrid cars on the market now get. Another story that we found out about recently was that in the energy bill, there are certain caps on the tax incentives on hybrid cars that basically place restrictions on how many incentives and how many benefits will be given for buying and selling hybrid cars. And I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about some of the lesser known, some of the small ways in which the Bush administration, the auto industry, and the oil industry together have worked to hold back the technology and the policies that will allow us to become independent from Middle East oil.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, you'd think the auto companies, let's just start with them, would have an interest in building more fuel-efficient cars and would, you know, see that there's a, you know, competitive advantage there. We saw it. A group of mothers started Don't Be Fueled, a grassroots campaign. I did say grassroots. Mothers for clean and safe vehicles, hybrids, not Hummers. When did we do that? You know, 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, 2 years ago? No, 3.5 years ago, the day after the Senate voted against improving CAFE standards, foreseeing that there would be a day where we really need to begin getting off oil with our cars. And at that time, I was driving a Toyota Prius, as I am now still, 45 miles per gallon. And when they voted against, you know, improving, you know, modestly up to 23, 24, 25 miles per gallon, I said, this democracy has become a hypocrisy. We all need to be driving gas sippers, not gas guzzlers, and moving in that direction. Well, that was the beginning of, well, it was a continuation of the, you know, auto industry combined with our federal government trying to, you know, suppress progress, trying to stand in the way. You're talking, by the way, about plug-in hybrids. I just want to mention that because I know those guys. They're brilliant. They've been working on this for, I'd say, four years, about as long as I've been working on my campaign, trying to get the car manufacturers' attention, trying to get Ford, GM, and even Toyota to start making, you know, cars that are not only getting 45 miles per gallon but can go much better than that. The technology is there, doesn't cost much. They do these retrofits in their garages, and they're just finally now starting to get some press, which is terrific, showing the potential, showing what is possible. This is the land of American, you know, innovation here, ingenuity. Why are we content to not only stand still but to go backwards and look at the cost of doing so? So there are so many great individuals and groups out there showing. There's a group at UC Davis that's working on hydrogen fuel. You know, that's where Governor Schwarzenegger wants to convert his Hummer.
Brilliant!
Hydrogen, and that's the answer. By the way, these new fuel standards will not affect Hummers. The largest vehicles, of course, will be exempt. Anything over 8,500 pounds is so big that it doesn't even count. But if anyone's still driving a Hummer by 2011, you know, it's too late for all of us.
But now, Betsy, there seems to be, and I've read a couple of stories on this recently, there seems to be a trade-off with a lot of these hybrid vehicles in that you pay a higher sticker price, and people are asking whether or not the savings that you get from the gas mileage is going to actually cost out when compared to the higher sticker price for the car.
I'm so glad you asked me that. I paid, about $22,000 for my first Prius, first generation, about, I was at 4 or 5 years ago, and then I bought a newer one. It was up to, I think, 24, because it's a little cushier, a little nicer. I mean, that may be more than many people in America can afford, but it's not, believe me, I live in Marin County. There's plenty of people driving around in, you know, $45,000, $50,000 SUVs. That's the norm, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a matter of expense, although you do end up saving money. I fill up, you know, and we're in the Bay Area where gas is now about $3 a gallon.
Sure.
Okay. I fill up, I still have never paid more than $25 per gallon for my hybrid, okay? I'm behind these, you know, Ford subdivisions that are taking, they're taking all day to fill up. And then, a 5 foot one, you know, woman will be alone and, you know, she needs a ladder to get back into her truck, okay? You save money on gas. You save time. You don't have to go back as often. But what's never factored in is the environmental cost. Is the political cost, is the economic cost of all this. So I realize we can't all go out and buy new vehicles, but when you do go to replace your car, and hopefully not a light truck, which is SUVs, minivans, and all these other vehicles that because they have been called light trucks are exempt from a lot of these, you know, passenger car standards, buy the most fuel-efficient model you can. And our campaign, Don't Be Fueled, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, is all about both increasing demand, so educating consumers about, you know, the connections between fuel, why mileage matters, and demanding that Detroit give us more options. So you do save money. Does it work out in the end that you're ahead? You know, I think so, over the long haul. The technology, though, may improve. Like, I've already, you know, replaced the Prius with the later technology that is a bigger car, but still giving me 45 miles per gallon.
Fantastic. Betsy Rosenberg, we're going to be listening this and every Sunday from 7 to 8 a.m. here on Air America. How do you do it? You get up, I mean, your show is on at what, 4 o'clock California time?
Well, I'll tell you a little secret. We do tape in San Francisco a couple of days in advance because I'm not really a morning person, but I get up early for you guys and then gulp my green tea trying to catch up with you.
Well, we really appreciate it. Betsy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks
you take care.
Me.
Bye-bye. Well, I guess I may have to go out and get me a Prius. I don't know.
There you go, Riley.
I have a Honda, and it gets great gas mileage. You know, they are among the most fuel-efficient cars.
Yeah, it just infuriates me to know that this technology is out there, and there's the capacity to make it better right now, today. And there are very powerful forces in the automotive industry, in the oil industry, and in this administration that are working to hold back progress for their own selfish bottom lines.
All right. Well, we're going to make some progress and wrap and tie this thing shortly. It's 47 minutes past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents Karaoke with Mark Riley's stirring rendition of MacArthur Park.
Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh, no. And Wayne Gilman singing James Brown.
Get up off of that thing and try to release that pressure. Wait a minute, so funky. I need it. Sunshine good. Good God.
This has been Karaoke with Mark Riley and Wayne Gilman on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Hey! Wow. Well,
I want to go to that karaoke bar.
Yeah, right. That's the karaoke bar. Y'all, here he comes. Here he is. That karaoke barfly himself.
News Daddy.
I'm impressed. I was really impressed by that, you know.
Hey, man, you want to tell the assembled multitude about the gigantic package you just got?
No.
I don't think he just got
listeners.
It. That's an expression.
He said it's a box of cookies, cakes, and various...
cakes, pies, whatever. Jewel boxes,
exactly.
You name it. They got a whole bunch of stuff.
That's Sandy Long from New Jersey.
Ooh. Mm. Well, hey, now that you've given her credit, does she know where you live?
No, thank God.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so if anybody, you know, has a Cookie Jones or anything here, you can spend the next few hours doing what we already did when Kristen, who's here with us in studio.
Yeah, thanks again, Kristen.
Thanks again, Kristen. I mean, we really had bagels and, that's right, you had a bagel, right?
Yeah, but you show for yours.
You know? Oh, you got some nerve.
You got some nerve. Pashman was up here listening attentively this morning. I was driving. I know where your skeletons are buried.
Listen. I know where your skeletons are buried.
I've seen you.
Right under that scale you have in your bathroom.
You are the heaviest you've ever been.
I am not the heaviest I've ever been.
Uh-huh. And you sit up here and you sound like as if, you know, you're weight conscious and...
I never said I was
weight
conscious.
You know, you look like Jonathan
Larson. I don't eat lumpy oatmeal like you. Look like who?
Jonathan Larson.
I look like Jonathan Larson, man.
You know, how are you comparing me
with Jonathan Larson?
You know,
what, are you shoot dope or something? What's wrong with you? What's going on? Anyway, we got business.
I can't wait. We're going to have a weigh-in. We're bringing in a scale. We'll get both of you guys. We'll get Larson in here, too. We'll do the whole thing up. It's going
to
be great.
Actually, Dan, I think the show is getting to his head with Marin out of here. You know,
to ride
getting to my head.
Really.
Your head barely fit through the door. You're starting to get to my head.
There's some tuna fish and french fries with your name on it in there,
all right? Have some cookies for dessert and a glass of water to assuage your weight problem. Anyway, Pat Robertson, the Reverend Pat Robertson. You know, we can't go out today without listening one more time to Pat Robertson equivocating on the issue of the assassination of Hugo Chavez.
I didn't say assassination.
You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it.
I didn't say assassination.
If he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it.
I didn't say assassination.
Assassinate him.
I didn't say assassination.
We really ought to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he said assassination, right?
I think he said assassination. But now we've got Kent Jones in here, and I don't think the word assassination is in anything he's about to say. Is it, Kent?
It could be.
Uh-oh.
You're going to have to hang on here. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition's Clip Notes. Christian extremist Pat Robertson said he didn't really mean that Venezuela's president should be assassinated.
Oh, my God.
Conservatives rushed to Robertson's defense, citing the biblical passages where Cain took out Abel and David took out Goliath. An angry Robertson said that any reporters who continue to misrepresent his remarks should be kidnapped slowly with piano wire.
Ooh.
A New Hampshire woman has filed a complaint against her doctor for diagnosing her as obese. It may have been how he phrased it, telling her, "Your tests have come back, and according to these x-rays, you are a fatty, fatty boomalatic." The patient reportedly had to file two complaints, one for each of her zip codes. The doctor said he was sorry to lose the patient, but noted that his scale was relieved. The director of the Tour de France has accused Lance Armstrong of fooling the world. The tour director went so far as to taunt Armstrong, saying, "What's he going to do, take his ball and go home?" Today's phrase just dropping into conversation. I guess the FCC was taking the day off when Pat Robertson called for the assassination of Hugo Chavez. Wake up, sheeple. There are two sets of rules, and whatever you do while Bush is president, you'll be breaking one of them.
Thank you very much, Ken Jones. By the way, you know, he has a lifetime deal with that ABC Family Channel. They can't take him off if they want him.
Well, he'll be dead soon.
Oh! Thanks, Dan! That's a great way to finish off the show. Tomorrow, Cindy Sheehan is going to be returning to Morning Sedition live from Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas. Plus, actress Melissa Rauch.
Rauch?
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 Rauch! That's it. I knew it was something like that. Melissa Rauch, who's starring in the new play, The Miseducation of Jenna Bush. Plus, we'll have another Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington. Thanks, everyone. Kent Jones, Kristen, Dan, Kalo, Brendan, Everyone, even Wayne Gilman, it's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.